But the real harm is when you don't throw it out fast enough. I built the system and the processes first because somebody told me that when you're in financing and you're in basically financial services, it's kind of dicey not to get that right. Often there is a healthy friction that's worth putting into the equation. But at the end of the day, the whole idea is to provide a solution that is accepted and works. Because the question is it easier to have a conversation about a $10,000 unit or a $290 a month payment?
Welcome to the Entrepreneur's Outlook podcast. I'm your host, Zach Pinert. You can find me on social at @itszachb. In each episode, I bring on experts from various industries for you to learn about their strategies and insights driving extra business growth. Today, you're joined by Zenon Albers, CEO of Mycroft, a company that helps homeowners finance essential HVAC and water heater replacement through flexible lease-to-own program, even when the traditional lenders turned him away. But funnily enough, before he set his foot somewhat in like the HVAC financing world, he actually spent 17 years leading companies through the chaos of post-communist Central and Eastern Europe, navigating privatization, financial crises, and markets where the rules were kind of still being written in like real time. And he also spent himself years as a contractor himself, building and struggling to grow home improvement businesses with his own money on the line, which gave him a rare understanding and perspective of the industry from both sides of the table. And today, as CEO of Mycroft, he applies those lessons to help homeowners who traditional lenders overlook to get financing they need while helping contractors close sale they might otherwise lose. Zenon, it's great to have you on the show. Welcome aboard.
Thank you for having me. That was a wonderful summary.
I love it. So one of the things, as it is a business, it is an entrepreneurship podcast, one of the things I always like to ask any guests that come on board, and I'm really curious to hear your answer, because I know you've been around the block, traveled like all across the world, worked in a lot of different capacity, but if you had to like restart maybe your career, any company that you've built from scratch, what's maybe the one thing that you feel you would do like differently?
Yeah, I think it's important that I bring up that I usually find myself in challenging, like transformational type of opportunities. And I would say for me, the thing that I've learned is that in those challenging situations, it's always about, I would say, people and technology, right? Mm-hmm. And I found that I've been pretty good with addressing people. I've been able to find talented people, attract them, retain them. I think with technology, sometimes you make a decision that you've already invested a lot in a company and you're kind of afraid to throw it out. But the real harm is when you don't throw it out fast enough. And kind of a major overhaul of technology is something I would do sooner in efforts, or even start with technology to make sure that processes, products, and procedures are set up well. So that's something that I always try to apply for things that I get involved in now.
Interesting. Everyone I speak to always have a different answer, whether it's like, oh, I want to like hire someone faster. Maybe like I wouldn't have gone this route. Maybe I raise capital, don't raise capital or anything like that. But the technology side of things is one that like I don't hear too often in terms of like things that should have been. And I know you've obviously managed, built, et cetera, like a lot of different companies. So you've been able to see from all these different points of views that technologies in a lot of cases can help.
Well, let me give you, because I think your audience is a lot about startups. So a startup I did some 15 years ago here in the U.S., I received some really good advice to apply, because it was a similar business to the one that I'm running now, Mycroft. It was financing for home improvements. And it was a pure startup, and it was basically 2011 when the markets were still unsure. If you recall, that was right at the Great Recession, right? So one of the things that I did was I built the company really from the ground up. I was convinced that the market is going to be there, and I knew I had access to some good people. But what I did is I built the system and the processes first, because somebody told me that when you're in financing and you're in basically financial services, it's kind of dicey not to get that right. So he said, I would not pass a ticket until your technology is set up perfectly for what you want. And we applied that exactly. We got all the process, we got all the procedures, we made sure we were right from the compliance standpoint, and then we rolled. And we rolled, the capital wasn't difficult to get, the market was recovering, and getting people to join was something that I found that was not overly difficult. That's why I think I'm always technology forward and technology centric, but that was a startup, which you would think it's different because you need the capital first, right? Mm-hmm. You always say, okay, your own capital enough or something like this, make sure the market is there. But quite frankly, I think that technology is something, especially now with AI, it has to be, you have to be tech forward in everything that you do.
Oh, yeah. I mean, every conversation I'm having nowadays, I don't think there's not a mention of AI when it comes to like business improvement and innovation here. So I'd love to shift gears like a little bit, because I know we talked about the technology rebuilding career, like a little bit on that, but I'd love for you to, I guess, give the basics, like the our audience, like when a homeowner gets turned down by, again, a traditional lender or a contractor is about to like lose a sale because of that. I'd love to understand like how MicroAlf actually helps and like what you guys are doing differently to be able to make that happen.
Yeah. And it's something that I think it's worthwhile to talk about maybe say a few years ago compared to now, because the credit environment really drives, let's say, the impact of what we do. So if you go back, say, 4 or 5 years ago, the credit environment in the United States was pretty strong. And when it's strong, people are happy to give credit, and you give credit to a lot more people. And I think you know this, and your audience should know this, is when you're selling a high ticket item, like for example, when even our ticket item is about $10,000, the average HVAC unit in the United States is well past that now. So when you're selling a high ticket item, it's very rare that financing isn't part of the discussion. Right. So, yeah, people write checks, people use cars, sure. But financing is a big part of a big ticket item. So when there's a good credit environment, people are happy to give you credit, and they'll go, let's say, what we say, deeper in the credit spectrum and provide a pretty good solution. And the other thing that happens is that when there's credit available, basically it fuels the economy. So it's a time where you're able to sell, and you're able to sell rather quickly. And there was a philosophy 4 or 5 years ago that you sell, and if you don't sell, you move on, because you know that the next house is likely you're going to go ahead and sell. Mm-hmm. Now, move it forward to today's environment, which started a couple of years ago, that credit is challenged. So basically 40% of the people do not qualify for what you would call a prime financing solution. Also, the economy is challenged, right? So people, the contractors are not selling as much as they did 3 or 4 years ago. It's a slower market. So what you have now is the contractor, first of all, is willing to take the time to try to sell the unit and to provide the solution, more importantly, to provide a solution to the customer, right? Whereas 5 years ago, the customer said, oh, I'm sorry, I tried the financing with my core financing. It didn't work. You know, maybe you can find a solution. I'm going to move on, right? That's the practicality of what it was. But now you have to fight a little bit harder. You have to work a little bit harder to go ahead and find that solution. And it's a worthwhile thing to do, because sales are not booming like they were 4 or 5 years ago. So now the contractor, the sales technician, or whoever is out there is going to take a little bit of time and say, hey, you didn't get qualified. We have a partner called MicroAlf, which works specifically with people with challenged credit, and they're likely to find a solution for you. So what we do for the contractors, we give them a chance to secure a sale. And if you think about this, you already went out there, you traveled to the house, you probably spend an hour and a half, 2 hours taking your customer through the solution, introducing to and obviously doing your work to evaluate the situation. You've invested a lead, you've invested your time. Why would you want to move away without securing that transaction? This gives you the chance to go ahead and get a sale for a customer, because of course we're going to try harder than anybody else to find a solution for that challenged customer. So that's for the contractor. For the consumer, I always say I like what we do. It's actually, I use the word noble. It's honorable what people like us do. And actually anybody in home improvement, trade, financing, that's something important, because you're either allowing a customer to invest in or preserve that investment in their house, which is typically their most important asset, right? So we're also helping the contractor, which is typically a smaller business, to grow. So you're being impactful in a couple of ways, right? Well, for the consumer, if you're dealing with a consumer who's a non-prime consumer, there's not many options out there. And there's, and if they are, they're super expensive. You know, I don't want to talk about like the cost of, say, payday loans or some other things like this. But what Mycroft did, and I didn't do this, my predecessors all did, they nuanced, they took a very interesting approach to say, hey, there's this market, which is a rent to own, a lease to own. Let's apply it to this asset and let's make it longer. So it's very innovative. And what it does is allows us to take on a little bit more risk, because in the lease, you actually own, we own the asset until it's it's paid for, right? So we're able to take a little bit more risk because we're the ownership. We have a secured position. So therefore, the pricing that we provide to the customer is actually very reasonable considering the risk. So to specifically answer your question, Zach, I would say is what we do is we provide a financing option to a consumer that has very few options. And we provide an opportunity to secure a sale to a contractor that is likely to lose it without this option. And of course, we do our work to try to find that solution. And, you know, it's a little bit less now, but in the past, we would find ways to approve about 70-75% of the applicants. Now, not every applicant takes this up because of the cost of it.
Of course.
But if you think about it, we're willing to take the risk given the situation to help the contractor. Now, it's a more challenged credit environment, so the statistic I threw out is a little bit less right now, but still a meaningful contribution to a business and to a consumer. Does that help understand?
Yeah, because I was doing like my research, and you had mentioned that example, like the rent to like own for like houses, like apartment condos, et cetera, and all that. I was like, that's kind of interesting that you can apply that with like a product, which obviously is still like home improvement related. It I wouldn't say beautifies your house, but it just adds like a more value to like a property, for example. And I feel like a lot of people can benefit from that, being able to have like those multiple options. And one thing I'd love to touch on though, because you mentioned like less favorable credits, people maybe have a lower credit score. And I guess there's like some sort of like assumption, like the space that a lower credit score automatically means it's a riskier, less desirable customer. Has that actually like matched like what you've seen, and like what does a decline really cost the homeowner, contractor?
I would say the fact of the matter is that from a business standpoint, there is a heightened risk with that, but it isn't the only. See, the credit score isn't the only contributor to a decision, and as a matter of fact, companies like Mycroft, we don't actually use a credit score in our decision. We use what we call alternative data to go ahead and find other things that we think matter more than a credit score. And we put those data points in there. Kind of the quality of your bank account, kind of your cash flow is very important, your debt to income type of thing, the cost of the item you want to go ahead and finance versus your income. Those weigh in very, very importantly in us. But I think as a general statement, you have to understand that, of course, it's a risk reward type of proposition, and that the correlation between a lower credit score will result in higher losses. But see, the key, the magic, I would say, you have to make the math work. You know, often business is mathematics. You have to make sure that, see, the losses are cost. There's other costs you have to consider. You have to come up what is the cost to the consumer to make sure that you're covering those costs, which is the credit risk as well as other things. And if the math works for both sides are satisfied, right? The customer is satisfied. I mean, nobody's going to be thrilled to pay probably anything really for things, but nobody's thrilled with the cost, but they'll understand, hey, I'm in this situation, which is challenged. The cost that I have to pay is satisfactory for my position. We think it's satisfactory for the risk. We make the math work, and it's worked, as evidenced by the fact that we're doing what we do for 15 years almost.
Yeah, it's a win-win situation, to put it simply. Like, you know, that for the consumers, contractors, obviously.
Hey, Zach, can I emphasize one point that kind of goes back to the previous question that I think is really important, is that for the home services, it's important to provide financing and, you know, have an LTO solution. But one of the things that we like to really emphasize about the HVAC. See, the HVAC today is people talk about your home comfort. Well, it's not even really your home comfort anymore. It's your health. It's your safety. I mean, if you're in Houston, Texas, or really whatever, Miami, Florida, or Tucson, Arizona, when it's hundreds of degrees out, you're not talking about comfort anymore. It does get into your health and the safety. Yeah. So this is something that I think the ability to have a creative and innovative solution like LTO specifically for HVAC is very, very meaningful because it is needed. You don't have a choice. Your HVAC goes down either in the summer or in the winter. If you're in Maine or Michigan or something like this, you need a solution. So I think it's kind of cool to be able to offer this innovative approach to specifically HVAC. It works for other areas as well, but HVAC is critical.
I mean, I know what you're talking about. It didn't happen to my HVAC. My car a couple of days ago, the AC stopped. I got to put it in the shop. Horrible to be able to drive. And then you just have no fresh air coming out of it, cold air. I'm like, I need to get that fixed. So like I can relate to the people to have that issue.
Imagine that that's at home, right? Yeah.
Even worse, you try to sleep. Right. Oh, that's a big no-go.
You know it.
And I guess like one thing I would love to talk about though is like you've described your approach as like embracing good friction, like going out of your way to like handhold contractors, homeowners, even when it like, I guess, slows things down. Like, why does that matter so much? You know, like, what would you think would happen if you optimized purely for speed and efficiency?
Yeah, this is a good debate. We have these debates internally. Sure. We have these debates with partners because especially if we're talking about partners, I think we're in a world that we want automation and we want quickness. I just had a discussion on that with a partner. You're like, you have to have this done in 10 seconds and everything works. I get it. And I know that lots of partners are in the game of finding a quick solution. There's an expression in financing that the second best thing to a quick yes is a quick no. Because it provides clarity, right? You know, it provides clarity to everybody. Well, that does work and that's important. That's a good philosophy to have. One of the things I like to say is that sometimes, see, specifically to subprime, specifically because two things. One is, as you mentioned earlier, we have an enhanced credit risk. We have a risk that we have to get comfortable with. On the other side of it, you also have a customer that is trying to figure out what kind of a solution because they don't have too many options, right? In this particular case, we find two things. When we interject a phone conversation or a reach out with the customer, we can answer a question that maybe they're unsettled about because a lot of people don't know what is an LTO. What does this mean? Who owns it? You know, there's lots of questions. Mm-hmm. It can't get really efficiently answered all the time in an automated process. Sometimes they're uncomfortable with it. And as a matter of fact, one of the biggest objections when people don't take us up is say, I don't know what an LTO is. I don't want this. I want it alone. People know what loans are. People don't know what leases are. I think anybody in the lease business struggles with that. So what you're able to do is that friction is it turns into nurturing. You may invest 2 or 3 minutes or find the time. It could be 2 or 3 hours later, but you answer the questions to the customer and you convert more for us. Mm-hmm. Now, the other aspect of that, there's a great rule that is always in financing. It's know your customer. Especially if you're taking on credit risk. The better you know your customer, the more comfortable you will be that you're taking a good credit risk. So if you spend a couple of minutes and you ask them questions, you verify some things, you can be more comfortable from the credit side as well. So we have this debate all the time is that, okay, you can get it from credit because there's always a good, I would say, to use that word friction in an organization between people who want to move quickly and people who want to slow down the process so not to make mistakes and take on risk. In some cases, it actually helps the people who want to move on to close. And that's when I talk about often there is a healthy friction that's worth putting into the equation. That helps us. Some of the people who do what we do, they're all about automation. And that's a different business model. Want to get it done quickly. Get that quick no, move on to the next thing. Let the system do it. Yeah. We're okay with nurturing the customer, the contractor, holding hands is what we call it, of course, and it does work. So that's a healthy friction to talk about.
Yeah, no, I think it's always interesting because like, as you mentioned, everyone nowadays, like speed, like efficiency. But in some cases, if you just like slow down a little bit, you get to understand your customer, you get to like really dive a little bit deeper into it, you can still have that efficiency. Maybe it's not faster, but maybe you get a higher close rate, conversion rate, because you're taking the time to provide that service, that education to the consumers. They're like really aware, they make an educated decision, everyone wins, simpler for everyone.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be super basic here, but I think what we're all in business to do is to find a solution, a suitable solution that's adopted, right? I accept it. I accept your solution, right? So I get it. It's always mathematics and speed and all that to move on and make everything efficient. I understand that, especially if you're a big business. You know, we're a middle-sized business, so we're more apt to do that. But at the end of the day, the whole idea is to provide a solution that is accepted and works.
I like that.
Conversion, right?
I like the way that you've reframed it. That is like adapted. That's really good. Like, I feel like a lot of people, it's just going to be, it works, great. If it doesn't work, they're probably not your customer. But if you can adapt to that person, then that's even better here. And you kind of talked about this a little bit earlier. Like, you mentioned that like HVAC system got a lot more expensive. I think it was since 2019, if I got that correctly. And a lot of like the working class homeowners are kind of, they're feeling squeezed, like in this current economy. How would you say is that changing, like the way that contractors need to talk to customers about price, monthly payments? I know we talked about adapting it, but I'd be kind of curious to dive a little bit there.
I think that this is kind of the most critical challenge for us to help the contractor, because the point you're bringing up is valid. I mean, and I entered the industry in 2020. And since that time, the statistics that'll support this, that the average HVAC has gone up over 50% in that time. So even I can give you the statistics of our business. When our average portfolio, the time I joined, was, I think we would do a lease at about $6,000, and now it's about $10,000. So it's even more than 50%. Now, 50% means obviously that is, and let's just put it this way, the ability to earn has not increased 50% over that same time period, okay? And especially for the classic customer that we deal with. So there's an out of balance. So obviously what it's done is it made, it's a sensitive word sometimes, but yeah, the affordability that's out, it's an issue for especially our customer. The people aren't able to afford. So two things, and this is kind of from the contractor perspective, is the contractor, you have to be willing to trade down. I think in the past 5 years ago, you're trying to push the sales ticket item to maximize the outcome. Get it, that's business. It's also probably a better solution, but it's not very affordable for these people. So that's number one. But for us, and more importantly, is you kind of lead with a financing discussion. Because the question is it easier to have a conversation about a $10,000 unit or a $290 a month payment, right? And I'm gonna bring up the most logical example is automobiles. I mean, if a person acquires an automobile, it doesn't matter where, I think you're sitting down with somebody in the F&I department, they're talking about, well, what kind of a payment can you afford? They lead with that discussion because not too many people, I mean, the price of a car I read is over $50,000, the average car, so very few people can write a check. I think that's a good example for us to understand as things get larger and ticket sizes. You say, hey, customer, this is Mr. and Mrs. Customer. I'm happy to provide you a solution. And I think we could get it to a payment that's affordable. Mm-hmm. And if they were lead with keeping it under, we find the magic number, $300 or less. If you can get a payment for $300 or less, first of all, it means that the person is more willing to take you up on that. And then from the credit profile standpoint, is you're able to accommodate and make that payment, right? Yeah. So lead with the payment, give the customer's option, but I would say always lead with the payment and then understand that you have to look at things from an affordability standpoint.
Yeah. And you mentioned like the monthly payment and like directly, like I made like the connection in my end, like cars. And then you mentioned that like right after, that like totally makes sense. It's much easier for consumer to be able to process that versus like a $10,000 payment. Get paid all cash. Most people, especially if they have a credit score that's not the best, can be a bit more efficient for them here.
For sure.
Yeah. Well, one other thing before we wrap things up here. I know you've been across a block, to put it very simply, and I'd love to shift gears a little bit more towards obviously the fact that you've been in this space for a while. Is there like any like parting thoughts, piece of advice that you would give to any maybe contractors, people that run home services business in terms of like, hey, if you're trying to, obviously you've been in their shoes. You mentioned yourself, you lost money running these type of businesses.
I have some good experiences to offer. I mean, one of the things is that I think that when you're a small business person running your organization specific to the trades, and you know, it's something that I've been around for practically the 15, 16 years I'm back in the United States. And first of all, trades are important. Home services are critically important to every person. Obviously, it's important to the economy. It's important from a standpoint of having opportunities to create value and actually build a business. So one thing is understand the importance of it. And if you go through highs and lows, I mean, that happens in any business, but really you're going through that right now. If you've been in this business for the last 3 to 5 years, there were highs like anything in home improvement. I mean, it was just going, you know, basically homes were being sold, remodeled, refurbished. Everything was going on, but now we're at a little bit of a trough, you know, so things are low. So you have to be a little bit flexible and understand that, for example, that's the thing I mentioned in HVAC. If you're used to selling higher ticket items, go ahead and take a smaller ticket item, get the sale, keep the margin, keep your business going. You know, focus on services, focus on maintenance, focus on repairs, which are very much what's going on right now. Look at ancillary products, plumbing services and things like that, electrical services for if you're in that business. If you're in other businesses, because I was involved in remodeling some garage businesses as well, as you understand, sometimes you're no longer, when you're in this challenged environment, you have what is termed a need to have versus a want to have. And if you're in the business of wants to haves, which is I was in with those other businesses, you'll understand that they go down the priority scale. And if you look at the top 10 projects, say 5 years ago, maybe some remodeling projects were up high because you were able to afford them. You wanted your house to look nice, and they slide down the scale. So you know that they're not going to be a priority. You're not going to be converting as much leads, but that still means there's projects out there. You structure your business, kind of commit to it. And understand that. So I would say, hey, have the fortitude to keep going. Understand if you think long-term that, hey, the United States market for the trades and the home services, there's a great focus on it right now. I think you've read that there's lots of investment going into training the skilled trades. It's kind of fun because one of the things about me is I actually went to a trade high school. So I live this. I mean, going back, whatever, 35 years ago, whatever, I'm, I'm learning to be a machinist. My friends are all learning to be carpenters and plumbers. And, you know, I did go on to college, but others didn't. But the thing is I learned the magnitude and importance of trades long, long ago. And it's really coming to fruition right now.
Yeah. I feel like the trades are just still going to be an industry that's going to keep on growing because we talked about technology innovation. I think it's going to take a little bit more time before a robot replaces us or anything like that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
I love that. I want to thank you so much for joining on. We've never had anyone really like trades related, finance and HVAC. So it was definitely an interesting conversation here. And for anyone that wants to get in touch with you, they want to learn more about Microff, what's kind of the best places to find you at here?
Yeah, I mean, the best thing would be an email at zolbrys@microff.com or find me on LinkedIn. Happy to connect with you if I could be of any value to anybody out there.
Perfect. And then microff.com, correct? Your website?
Yeah, sorry, microff.com. Thank you.
Perfect. We're going to put that on the show notes. If anyone wants to check out, reach out to Zen on here. And then to your listeners, if you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe, like, comment, review, all that fun stuff. And then until then, keep pushing. We'll see you in the next one.